Carl Jung said, "Awaken and shine your light for others to follow. The privilege of a lifetime is to become who you truly are." This is an invitation to move differently in the world, to operate from a place of deep knowing and alignment. I'm Adrienne McDonald, and welcome to the Source Code Podcast. Let's dive in. Hello, beautiful humans, and welcome back, or welcome if it's your first time. Today we are continuing my conversation series. Since I have some interesting friends and we have some interesting conversations, we are inviting you to listen in. In light of the fact that Earth Day is coming up, I thought it would be a perfect time to have a conversation with my friend Julie Seal. She is a global sustainability manager for a textile organization. And I've known Julie for a while, and we've had some very interesting conversations around recycle, reuse, all things environmental. Now, this episode does not get into climate change or any of the politics. We both feel that, you know, looking and doing some good things for the earth shouldn't have anything to do with politics. So we keep it real and we keep it simple and we keep it, you know, digestible and actionable. So let's dive in. Hello, beautiful humans, and welcome back. And today is another conversation in my conversation series with my good friend, Julie Seal. I've known Julie for a lot longer than either one of us wants to admit. She went to college with my husband. And I thought I would bring Julie on today because we have some really interesting conversations around the environment, reuse, community building. And I think with Earth Day being in April, I thought, that would be the perfect person to talk to, right? And I think that we'll start off with what got me started thinking about this episode was I had read a quote or heard a quote around, if you want people to care about the environment, the best thing that we can do is to lift people out of poverty. And I have mulled that for a while. I think Jordan Peterson said that. Don't come for me about Peterson people. I think that there's a measure of truth to that, but I don't think it's the whole ball of wax. I think when I look back at my own experience and when I started really being a little bit more mindful about these things, it was really when I started down probably my Reiki training and my shamanic training, because I have a much more holistic view of everything. And I thought, gosh, who does this better than anybody that I know? And has really made me a better person, I think, by some of her suggestions. And I thought, oh, that's Julie. I can talk to Julie about that. So Julie has a master's degree in environmental health sciences, I think.
This is a MSPH in environmental sciences, yes.
So whenever I have any questions about that, I always come to her, so. So, Jules, thank you for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Having me on today. This is going to be kind of fun.
It will be. So, what do you think about that? I mean, I think that people get overwhelmed by all the information's out there. I think the climate stuff has gotten really politicized, and it doesn't really need to be. But I think overwhelm, when someone starts looking at this, is the first thing that comes to my mind. What about yours?
First of all, I totally agree with about the politicization of the climate action, and it's really almost disempowered the individual to feel like they can make a difference. And so I think it's one of our first goals in talking about the environment and what we can do on a personal level is to actually bring actionable items on a personal level. There's scientists, there's politicians who want to talk big picture, the earth, the universe. And what does that mean to an individual?
Right.
So we have to make sure we bring it down to an individual level. And the tie between poverty and environment is long been a topic of discussion. And when someone is in a poverty setting, which is, I think we forget how much of the world actually is in a poverty setting, that
absolutely
that doesn't have access to drinking water, doesn't have a roof over their head. When you look at the statistics of that, it's really overwhelming for us to comprehend, especially here in America, but also in other industrialized parts, how much of the world is still right there. And I think the thinking behind that poverty, you know, there's a tie, is that people in poverty have to meet basic needs. They're right. Not thinking about the future or where their waste is going or their air emissions. That is meaningless to them.
Right.
What has meaning is right here, right now. I need water. I need food. So if we really want to solve the environmental issues and the forward thinking issues, lifting people out of poverty allows people to look up and out and around. And so I think there's a distinct tie there between those two topics. But, you know, a lot of things that people can do are, and we'll get into this a little bit more, but is taking the three R's, the basic concept of reduce, reuse, recycle. We hear 90% of our action items on the 90% on the recycle, the third R.
Right.
And those three R's are listed in order of priority.
Okay, so what were those again in order of priority so I can break this down?
So it's reduce.
Reduce.
Reuse.
And then
recycle.
And recycle.
Recycle is the last option. You know how, like, if you're going into, if you're doing welding, your mask is your last thing to protect you. It's not the first thing from the damage from it. So we spend 90% of our time about recycling. And in America, the recycling infrastructure is in its infancy. So we really need to bring our focus back up to the reduce and the reuse. And that's kind of where I come in recognizing where my personal role is in this and what realm of influence I can have as an individual. And that's really what I want to tell people or talk to people about today is, you know, you can break it down into actionable items for yourself. That really,
I think that this is a good, like, I've talked about your Julie's porch on a podcast episode way, way back if you're a longtime listener, but what has, it's just been fascinating to see how much is done in the community just on your porch. So
it is a true social experiment out there.
It really is. So why don't you break down what your thought process was there? And then I'm going to chime in with some of my own comments during the process.
Back to that, making things that we can do individually. Both my father and my mother were raised in poverty situations, particularly my mother. So one of the ideas was, how can I make sure that if someone needs a pair of shoes or if someone needs a school supply item, how can I accomplish that in a reasonable, manageable way? And it's my part of giving back because I've been given a lot of privileges from my parents who didn't have a lot as far as going to school and everything else. So part of how do I complete the circle? How do I give back to society? So I started a reuse program. It's really a table on my porch and people drop stuff off and they pick stuff up. And it goes on 24/7, 365 all the time. You could really absolutely staple my head to the carpet as to what the different types of stuff that shows up on that porch and what people claim. So it's a small example of how to do things. And all I do is take pictures of Facebook, take pictures and post it on Facebook, and people come and pick stuff up. And it is part of my hierarchy that I call the reuse hierarchy. And what that is there's intentional reuse, there's incidental reuse, and there's accidental reuse. Intentional reuse, if someone comes to my porch to pick something up, they wanted it. They needed it. If you give it to a charity and they happen to find it and they buy it, that's accidental reuse. Incidental reuse. And accidental reuse is just someone finding something on the street. So it's a hierarchy in their reuse, and I try to really hit on the intentional reuse part of it. It's an intentional effort to make sure that what is someone's waste does not end up in the landfill. And So that's how it kind of got started, and it's just taken on a life of its own at this point.
Let's talk about landfill for just a second. I think you told me one time that you had some sort of anecdote that you talked about how much garbage you're buried with, like a football field of garbage. Is that what it was?
This is kind of a geek's dream. You know how people of like pharaohs were buried with their riches?
Yeah.
I have this secret fantasy where everybody gets buried with their waste, so they have to carry it with them for an eternity. So if you took an average person throws away over 4 pounds a day, and what that would equate to is a football field almost a foot deep. That's what you would take with you in this lifetime. That's not including like construction and demolition waste or anything that's associated with living in this world. It is your personal waste footprint. So
it's crazy. It's crazy to think about. I will say though, after some of our conversations, before I put something in the trash, I really do think about it significantly more than I used to. And I think that and I think creativity plays into this as well, because I like some of the posts I've seen that you've made, it's like, God, I wouldn't have thought that you could use A for B or something like that. But what's also great is you'll take a picture of something. And sometimes I think you do this from work and say, okay, guys, we have this, because you work for a manufacturing company. What could we do with this? And then it's sort of like crowd creative of, okay, yes, well, we could do A, B, or C with this, or, hey, what about X? Or, oh, so-and-so might need this, which I think is incredible, because the next time you're doing a demo, excuse me, in your kitchen, okay, I'm going to take these cabinets I'm not going to use anymore. Well, rather than trash them, it's like, okay, well, somebody else could use that or something along those lines. It's really been quite striking what some people have come up with when you've just posted a picture.
Yeah, I am not the creative one on reuse. I'm not going to be the one with glue and sparkles making something shiny again. That's just not me. But yeah, a lot of things, like when I tore out the kitchen in this house, the cabinets were old school, real wood. And one is now my mom's current workbench. One was an old shoe rack that was missing a part that is now someone's wood clamp collection holder. I literally have no idea what people ends up with this stuff. I always said I wanted to kind of lowjack everything and see how many states this stuff ends up in, because it does go all over the U.S. I've had to mail stuff to North Carolina, to Louisiana, because somebody said, will you please send that? I will send you mail postage if you send that to me. So it's, the sky's the limit. And I'm actually amazed that out of all the stuff, out of all the years, probably 85% of it gets claimed, which is pretty remarkable. You know, when you take stuff to some of these larger charities, most of it, well, a good fraction of it turns into trash.
That actually surprised me, because first of all, I'm not, Goodwill is not really high on my list of people to give to. It's probably the last.
I was trying not to say that word.
I don't even think they're a charity. I think they're for profit. But
75% of the textiles you take to Goodwill end up in a dump overseas. So,
which is crazy to me. I mean, people think that they're doing something good, right?
Right.
And then, so I started taking more of my stuff to like Dress for Success or some stuff like that, where, you know, they could repurpose for women that were looking for jobs and stuff like that. But I've gotten a lot more, I feel like I've educated myself a little bit better about where that stuff goes. I think that's definitely something that people can do, is like, you know, ask questions. A little bit more.
There's a bunch of us geeks running around who have suggestions on how to do this. And really the easiest answer is one of your neighbors probably wants it. Now,
yeah.
I know most people don't want people coming on their porch like I have.
And right.
I understand that. But you know, everyone has a Facebook group and somebody can offer it up, you know, or, you know, Facebook friends. You'd be amazed about how much could get reused in your realm of influence. And I talk about those words a lot. Realm of influence, what you can do. People really want to do the right thing. They do. But the pathway is not always easiest for them to do it.
Yeah.
Which is why I do a lot of recycling on the porch for hard to use items like prescription pill bottles.
I know. I started, that was one of the things that I have a little baggie.
Yeah.
And somebody says, that I bring down whenever I come to visit Julie, and I just dump my prescription bottles in there. I don't have that many, but that's keeping them out of the landfill.
That's right. And I get a ton of them. We have some, you know, it's just a lot of people bring them because there's no outlet for them. There's no curbside recycling program takes them. And they said, well, what do you do with them? Well, I have a friend who runs a company in Charlotte called Inspired Plastics. And she takes that and some other really hard to recycle plastics, number fives, and turns it into things like park benches and things that have been installed. So it's about knowing how to do it, but I provide the means for it.
Right.
Everybody just comes here, dumps it off, and they're done with it. So I think it's if you know, one of those things I try to do is not just create the pathways, but like you said, inspire people to think about what they do on a daily basis, what they throw away. You know, everybody, you know, uses K-cups and they throw them away as a huge waste. If they use coffee, they just put the coffee grinds in the trash, perfect compost material. And no one can tell me that they can't compost. I have a postage stamp size yard and I just put it in one spot.
She really does. She has a very tiny yard and it's out there and doing its thing. I mean, speaking of the K-cups, actually, you're the one that got me off the K-cups. I have a reusable one.
Excellent.
Now. Excellent. And actually, I like it better because I can put better coffee in it than most of those K-cups. Just put that out there.
There you go. And you got me on the beeswax wrap and Louis Saran wrap.
I love the beeswax.
Oh, my God. Who doesn't? I got to order me some more because I'm like...
Those are awesome. Beeswax wraps replacing the Saran wraps. The other thing that I've been trying of late is laundry sheets.
Yeah, I've been trying those too. I've been trying
instead
different ones.
Instead of like, you know, buying the things of Tide and Gain and whatnot. And I put on this year, I think I'm going to try to find a replacement toothpaste. I've seen those little, you bite into them and it foams up a little bit. So I think I'm going to try those this year too.
And what people don't realize about these common everyday products like Saran Wrap is they're petroleum based. You know, they start with oil. Excuse me. So everything we do, every little thing we do does add up. I don't think people realize it, but it does add up. And, you know, there's lots of outlets, but just ask. And that's the trigger that I try to encourage in people. The trigger to, before you throw this away, ask somebody. Well, is there a use for this, you know, or is there a reuse? Just that higher level thinking.
And I think this is really, so my shaman teacher talks about something called digging where you stand, which is basically that community, like what can I do as an individual where I'm at right now in my community, that sort of thought process. And what I have found fascinating to watch an experience when I've been in your sphere of influence, as you call it, is the way that you build community is so interesting and quick. And I think that you sometimes discount yourself with that because you do it so naturally. And people, anything that we do naturally, we think, well, anybody can do this. And that's not necessarily accurate. But one of the great accomplishments I think Julie has done is there is an art crawl in Columbia, in Cottontown, Columbia, South Carolina, in the Southeast United States, that she started. And it really got started because I was doing some jewelry work. And our friend Lynn is a painter, and Julie decided to have a little art show for us one day. And then we're like, hey,
we did. Like,
we could do more. And I want you to talk a little bit about Cottontown Art and Crawl, because I think this is also a testament of how you can come up with an idea as an individual and pull people together and do something quite amazing.
Yeah, and it was. It was because of your jewelry making and Rebecca Lynn Horn's painting. We did a little drop-in at the house one night. I invited some neighbors and friends, and it was just a joyful experience. There may have been some fermented grapes involved.
If there was.
Possibly. But you know, my neighbors and I sat there and talked, and all of us talked about, you know, this would be kind of cool to do on a community basis. We are, you know, in a historic neighborhood district. The houses are quite close together. But we were like, you know, how do you do this without having people in your house? You know, how do you do this? And so, yeah, in 2019, in January of 2019, I asked the Cottontown Neighborhood Board, I said, can I use the name Cottontown to give it an identity? And a couple of weeks, they said, yeah, kind of keep it down y'all's end, you know, whatever. And the thought was that we would put artists on the porch and yards of a few of my neighbors, you know, have a few artists do some, like a pop-up tent or whatever, and try to sell. And we did. And we had, I think I remember keep scratching out the sign on my homemade poster. It went from like 18 artists to maybe 25 artists that first year.
Yep.
I had a little scratch out poster and it looked really tacky, but power of social media. You know, we had about 350 people show up for a few artists, you know, and it was just like, maybe we have something here. So I enlisted my great neighbor, Russell Sox, jumped on board as events administrator. The Neighborhood Association formed a committee. And lo and behold, you know, we just had our sixth annual Cottontown Art Crawl. Almost 200 artists. They collectively in 5 hours, they brought in over $215,000. And it's just turned into a beautiful thing. And I think the reason it works is born out of the love of a community, an altruistic desire to help artists. No one's making money, I mean, except for the artists. All the entire committee's volunteer, and none of us are artists. And I know that sounds so counterintuitive to how everything is set up. You know, it's, you know, most art shows are juried, and you know, they have artists who are world renowned picking who participates. And this is really, if you build it, they will come. So,
and yeah. That the art crawl has gotten recognition from the city, and it won an award.
We won the Columbia Council of Neighborhoods new program of the year in 2020. We won two other City of Columbia awards for best festival. So it's not just something that's stuck together. It's really well planned, well thought out. We have somewhere, we don't have an exact count, but somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 attendees every year now. So it's really turned into a really joyful art experience, and it's meant for everybody. It's not meant, you don't have to know, you know, this artist or that artist. It's meant to make art approachable. But that's a community, that's part of that inclusivity, though, thing that we keep talking about and lifting each other up. People are so missing community and connection.
Yeah.
And when you see a group of people who are trying to lift others up to give them an avenue to sell, and the artists don't pay a thing to participate. They literally just have to show up. But people respond to that. They react to that. The porch program, the reuse program, the recycling is all the same way. We're trying to do something good here that doesn't cost you a thing. You just need to show up and participate. And the end result of all of this is what it's starting to morph into, not just the art crawl, not just the recycling or reuse, is that when you have people who start assisting you and becoming environmental ambassadors because they see what can be done, they're not just fans. I have a lot of fans about the reuse and recycling and art crawl. But when they themselves become ambassadors, that's what you've done. That's the accomplishment. When you have someone saying, I'm moving out of the neighborhood, I'm going to Tennessee, but I'm going to try to do this in my new neighborhood because I love it so much. Or, you know, or I've started my own collection program at my own house. to help out. These are the things you're getting to. And when you get to that point, but Mac, I don't want people to think this is done overnight.
Yeah.
My first journey started in, I can tell you when it was, 2004. I had emptied my own trash can. I worked at a military base. And one of the recycling ladies who was very strict dumped the entire contents of my trash can back on my desk and said, try again. And so that was my first introduction to how to start recycling seriously. And she was right. She was absolutely right. Half of what was in my trash can was recyclable. So it's grown from there. When I worked for a utility company, you know, I really got kind of scoffed at because I started an office supply reuse program. And, you know, I started cans and bottles. I asked for one bin for cans and bottles on our common cafeteria floor. And I had to sit through an hour-long speech about how smoking was being cast out of buildings and communism and all because we had this blow-up old guy who hated everything about hippies. So I had to listen to that. And at the end of the hour, because I was still sitting there, he said, put your bin out. So I did. And years later, we had recycling at 60% of our locations across the Carolinas. We were moving houses instead of demolishing them. We had a robust charity program for all of our used furniture or outdated office supplies. It took me more than a decade to get to that point. This is not about overnight success. So if you do a shoe drive and you only get one pair of shoes, that's okay. Because if you're persistent about your goals and your passions, people will follow you. If you're trying to turn a dollar, they're going to give you the wonky eye. But if you're being persistent about your passions and being true to what you're trying to do, they will follow.
Yeah. I think that's the thing is start where you are and meet people where they are, right? And come from a place of curiosity and not judgment. And that goes a long
way. Say it again for the people in the background.
Yeah, I knew this from my 20 plus years in corporate tech, right? It was if you really want to get people on board with some things, you got to break it down for them. You got to do things in phases. You got to, and I mean, that applies to just about freaking everything, right? So I think that that's definitely part of the process. But
and being willing to recognize them for trying.
Yeah.
You've got to give it back. And I call it constant cheerleading. And it sounds really sickening, but I don't mean that because it comes from an honest place. If someone takes the time to do something or to bring something to reuse, I say, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to reuse. Thank you for taking the time to recycle. Because it's that hesitation from throwing it away. That's what you're trying to get to. It's the hesitation that I can't do anything personally.
Right.
And there's so much we can do. We just have to be willing to be involved. And that's really scary for a lot of folks to kind of involve themselves in a public eye. Or, you know, oh, I might get rejected or people might think I'm crazy. Your value stops where other people's opinion begins. So make sure you know your value and you're rooted in it. And you can do some amazing things in this lifetime.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is the fun part of it. I get to do it all day, every day. It's when I'm down about other stuff or work's driving me crazy or something, I go back because this is where my happy place is. I go back and do some recycling, reuse, do a new program, do a new food drive, shoe drive, whatever, because it keeps me grounded in knowing that there's more to work life than what I'm going through.
Well, that is an interesting point that you're making there that I have really found this to be true in my own life. And I think that there's if I went and looked hard enough, there's probably some sort of study done around it. But if you are feeling bad and you are feeling dejected and you're feeling overwhelmed, hopeless, all the negative feelings, if you will go out and do something for someone else, it is one of the fastest ways to lift you up. And I mean, I do that now. If I'm feeling off, or if I'm just like, or like, you know, I'm, because I'm an entrepreneur, right? Like, some days aren't as great as others, just like everybody else. But that, my default now is like, okay, so who can I help today? Even if it's something tiny, it really does have an impact on your own mental health. And that has that ripple effect. And you don't know. You don't know what that small gesture is going to do.
Absolutely.
But I can tell you, it's going to do something good.
Yeah. It can even be a kind comment to somebody.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
An unwarranted, out of the blue, kind comment. But it's back to just encouraging people to participate in something, in whatever way they're comfortable participating.
Yeah.
And it can be very behind the scenes. It can be something very public. I think you've actually mentioned that before about how people choose to operate. And it doesn't matter, but do something.
Yeah.
It is not enough. In fact, I have to tell you, they have this thing I keep seeing on Facebook. Wow. It's called Dole Women's Club. Have you
seen that?
Oh my God. These people are like the antithesis of how to live, because they're like, you know, I like Mongolian bats and I like to read and knit. And that's all great. I mean, that's you, that's you. But we have an obligation to give back. There is a circle to be observed here. And I don't think it's enough to watch shows about Mongolian bats and knit without giving something back.
I have said this on the podcast in many episodes. You will continue to hear me saying this. I really think that everyone's purpose on this earth is the same. I think it's they came here incarnated for the evolution of their soul, and to give back to humanity, the collective, in some positive way. Now, that is everyone else. Everyone has their unique expression of that. But I think that at the core, that is why we are here. Evolution of our soul, give back to the humanity and the collective in some positive way. And you don't have to be famous to do that, man.
No,
you just don't.
You don't.
In fact, most of us are not going to be. So, and that's cool too. So as we're wrapping up here, why don't you give me your three best recommendations for the individual to make a difference?
Okay, from a climate action, what can I do? The world's going to roast on its own. Composting is the biggest, your food waste is the biggest impact of your carbon footprint, period. And some people will say, well, I don't have a barrel and I don't have this. Oh my God, you do not need all that. I have one bed that is my recipient for all my stuff. Everything but raw meat goes in there, and they say, oh, you can't put this, you can't put that. They lie, just do it anyway. So just pick a spot, that's your spot. I say, well, you know, it'll bring in critters and fruit flies. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, the critters were there before you put the compost out there. So they just might be a little more attracted to it. You might find a little chicken bone strewn out somewhere. That's your way to give back to nature. Leave it alone. Compost. So simple. And it is the bulk of our trash weight is food waste. Get with the program. All right. Number one. Number two is to do something on a recurring basis that has nothing to do with your glory or padding your wallet. Whatever that means for you, I don't care. Something good, but do something for others that are outside of your own fame, glory, and fortune. And the third one, let me see, the third wish is the most important, so let me think on this for a good hard minute. Just to be a resource to others, educate yourself on what is out there, what is possible, quick Google search. Regretfully, recycling reuse is so provincial, it's very regionalized. You have to know what your city does, what your county does. There's no sweeping answer for everybody. So take the time to learn what you can do in your area. And I had a neighbor, a young neighbor, very environmental friendly, has a TerraCycle box on his porch and for all the toothpaste containers. He's very good. But, you know, even he didn't know that City of Columbia has a cooking oil recycling program. So I take all of my used oil collected over a year and take my little 5-gallon bucket and dump it. So learn what is around you, because those are the tools that you will need to do better. And I always say this, you know, people get tired of environmentalists because they think of people like, I hate to say it, Greta Thunberg or whatever her name is, you know, blocking streets here recently, getting arrested. And those are her, that's her way to get publicity. Okay, let's not get twisted about what Greta's doing. They think about these extremists and environmental people, and it's not about being perfect. I say this all the time. The best thing you can do is be a vegetarian to really cut your carbon footprint other than composting. But I will never pass by a cheeseburger, ever, ever. So that ship has sailed for me, okay? But you know, there's certain things you can do in with the tools you have available, and just to be better, more educated about it, and be a resource for others. We spend too much of our time in our own heads, in our own houses, sitting there stressing about stuff we cannot control. And, you know, regardless of your religion or whatever, and this is, I know we say it, politics and religion, regardless of religion, there is a basis for what we are talking about not accumulating things, for not accumulating riches, to giving back. It doesn't, pick your religion. I don't even care. Even if you're an atheist, something will tell you that having your house full of crap that you don't use is not appropriate. It's not appropriate. So just being a resource for others and making sure you're living how you were intended to live, and by your own code of conduct. So anyway.
Love it. Love it. It's been fun and a great conversation. And as always, I appreciate all the listeners. And
Mac, thank you so much for letting me jibber jabber about this for it this morning.
Absolutely.
This
fun. Absolutely. Yep. All right.
Enjoy the day.
I hope you enjoyed listening to the conversation with Julie as much as I had having it. And I hope that you ponder reuse a little bit more. I mean, she really has changed my way of thinking around that. So thanks for listening once again. Thanks for supporting the podcast. Would love to hear feedback from you on social media. I tend to be on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Threads more than anywhere else. And I look forward to connecting next week. Remember to find beauty every day and to seek out the magic in the mundane. Thank you for listening to the Source Code Podcast. If you found this episode insightful and feel moved to, please leave a review and share it out with those you believe will find it helpful. You can check out my website for more information at www.adrianmcdonald.com. And for more of my more regular musings, connect with me on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and LinkedIn. I hope you have a beautiful week.